case number 75600 in the matter of the guardianship of the person in the state of Charles E. Vandermark, a protected person, with Washoe County Public Guardian as the appellant, and VA Sierra Nevada Healthcare Systems and Mr. Vandermark respondents. Okay, we have Ms. Gustafson for the appellant, Mr. Stovall, and Ms. Richards for the respondent. Okay, Ms. Gustafson, you have 15 minutes. Would you like to reserve any of that time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes.
Please. You may do so. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Jennifer Gustafson, and I'm here today representing Washoe County by and through the Washoe County Public Guardian's Office. Mr. Vandermark is not a Washoe County resident, and so he does not qualify for guardianship services through the Washoe County Public Guardian. The district court found that Mr. Vandermark did not intend to relocate to Washoe County and did not intend to stay. Those factual findings are supported by substantial evidence in this record. However, the district court misapplied those factual findings to the applicable law, and that's the issue in this case. Despite finding that Mr. Vandermark had no intention to relocate to Washoe County and no intention to stay, the district court appointed the Washoe County Public Guardian as permanent guardian over Mr. Vandermark's person and estate. And in doing so, the court necessarily ordered the public guardian to engage in ultra vires activity, to act outside the scope of the guardianship statutes that the legislature has authorized. And that is the legal error which requires reversal in this case and an order vacating the public guardian's appointment as guardian for Mr.
Vandermark. How does his Mr. Vandermark's mental infirmities play into this and his ability to make decisions? Could anybody, if they're Alzheimer's and all that, be able to form the intent for residency and all? I mean, how can you do that? You can do with most people you can, but here that this man wasn't in a position to do so and testify and so on and so forth. So how should we factor that into our analysis?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think you really can, because even though incapacity is a very individualized determination, I mean, people can be incapacitated in some areas of their lives and not in other areas of the lives of their lives. What the court must do, of course, is look at the plain language in NRS 253.200. And the legislature, that's the requirement that has been established by the legislature. In order for the Washoe County Public Guardian to serve as guardian, a person must have intended to move into Washoe County and intended to reside there for an indefinite period of time. So that's the prescription that the legislature has placed on the requirement for a public guardian, Your Honor.
So I have a question in that regard. You've got 253.202P as well.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was he placed in institutional care when came here? And if so, that's a whole other issue that would indicate that he wasn't a resident, because the county of where he resided before he was institutionalized would be the county of residence.
Yes, Your Honor, that is our position, that Mr. Vandermark was placed in institutional care on October 18th, 2016, when he was admitted to Tahoe Forest Hospital after he was in the car accident. And Mr. Vandermark, because he was discharged directly into the VA's care, control, and custody and remained, you know, uninterruptedly in the care, control, and custody of the VA throughout the entire guardianship proceedings and to this day, that the date that Mr. Vandermark entered institutional care was October 18th. And so, of course, you have to look at which county was his county of residence prior to that date. Mr. Vandermark had never entered the state of Nevada prior to that date. So inevitably, his county of residence would be some county in California. Doesn't really matter, you know, it's not up to this court to determine which county that is, because the relevant factor for this court is whether Washoe County was Mr. Vandermark's county of residence. So yes, Your Honor, that is correct. But even if this court were to find that Mr. Vandermark was never placed in institutional care at any point in time, you have to look at subsection 9A. And there's simply no evidence in this record to indicate that Mr. Vandermark moved to Washoe County with the intent to reside there for an indefinite period of time. And of course, that's
Counsel,
dispositive. Yes,
so,
Your Honor.
We've got on the one hand NRS 159.1998, which allows the court to have jurisdiction for a potential guardianship over the proposed protected person, even if they don't even have a home state. So we have jurisdiction, but then we can't appoint the county public guardian under 253.200 under your argument. So what happens? Only people that can afford private guardians can have guardianships in Nevada, and otherwise we have to send them elsewhere? Like, how do these two statutes work together?
Well, Your Honor, as far as what happens, that is a policy consideration that's in the province of the legislature. As the court has pointed out, NRS 159.1998 is the general personal jurisdiction statute. And that just allows a court, if there's no home state or if Nevada is the home state, to appoint a public guardian. However, that doesn't end the inquiry, because in order for a county's public guardian to be appointed, you have to look at NRS 253.200. And that's, if you look at the legislative history, prior to 2007, there was no county residency requirement. And although the legislative history is fairly sparse, what it does reflect is the basis for the county residency requirement. In multiple written testimony from constituents for SB 157, which was the Senate bill that brought the county residency statute before the legislature, there is the underlying concern that the reason for the county residency requirement is that out-of-state hospitals and agencies and hospitals and agencies in other counties were transporting individuals into particular counties that had regional medical facilities for medical treatment. And then those individuals were falling upon the resources of the local government and the local county public guardian. And that was essentially becoming an unmanageable situation. So in looking at, you know, the policy considerations, the legislature necessarily had to weigh the policy between providing guardianship services to every person who is physically present in a county with the competing policy consideration of preserving local governmental resources, which of course are finite, and allocating those resources properly. And in enacting the county residency requirement, the legislature inevitably determined that on balance, it was appropriate to limit the pool of people who could qualify for the services of a public guardian by enacting a county residency requirement and by specifically defining that county residency requirement. So you can have personal jurisdiction, you can have a proper venue within Nevada for guardianship cases, and yet the person may not qualify for the services of a public guardian.
So is there another option? Like, is there, I mean, I don't do guardianship, right? Is there some other way to get a guardian in place other than the public guardian?
Well, Your Honor, with regard to Mr. Vandermark, in this case, the Veterans Administration certainly could have brought a petition for conservatorship within the state of California. California does have jurisdiction, it did and continues to have jurisdiction over Mr. Vandermark. So that is an option that the VA could have elected to appoint a guardian within California. And as the court mentioned earlier, yes, the VA could have also filed a guardianship petition in the Second Judicial District Court, assuming there was no personal jurisdictional issues, and could have requested appointment of a private professional guardian. There's also, you know, there's also alternatives to guardianship with regard to Mr. Vandermark that the VA could explore, supported decision making and things of that nature, which of course are not.
Because if we have someone who's homeless and has some mental health issues, in this case with dementia, it seems like, you know, obviously the court below was concerned, and we're concerned about not just saying, you know, sorry, can't help you, dump you out on the street. I mean, that's not the way we want to treat people. I know we're not the policymakers, but obviously we have concerns about how this person should be treated.
Yes, Your Honor, and the overall statutory scheme does not contemplate that a county's public guardian acts as a catch-all guardian, and that's evident by the county residency requirement. As far as guardianship services generally, that's not the equivalent to saying that Mr. Vandermark would be dumped out on the street. A guardian simply provides legal consents. They are substitute decision makers for a person. The services, you know, housing, medical treatment, those services are not provided by the guardian. They're provided by, you know, providers within the community. It's, you know, it's not unusual that there are qualifications to receive a public benefit. Public, you know, governmental public benefits always have qualifications. I mean, there may be individuals present in a county, state, or the U.S. who would really benefit from Medicaid, but they may not qualify for Medicaid because they're not a citizen, they're not a legal permanent resident, or they may not qualify for a community-based waiver because they haven't attained the age of 65. So in all sorts of governmental schemes, there are certain qualifications a person has to meet in order to be eligible for the services, in this case, of a county public guardian.
If I may follow up on that for just a second. This isn't to say that this individual will get dumped on the street. The VA is still responsible for his financial well-being as far as his treatment. It's not Washoe County that picks that up.
Well, Your Honor, the VA is Mr. Vandermark's services provider. Mr. Vandermark is a service-connected veteran, and I'm not entirely certain on the level of service connectivity he has. But no, Your Honor, the public guardian does not provide financial assistance. I think that's...
It doesn't become a burden to Washoe County, other than the fact that perhaps the guardian has been appointed to make certain decisions on his behalf.
Well, and yes, Your Honor, and that's, of course, our concern, because if the public guardian is acting outside the scope of the statutory authorities granted to her, I mean, she's potentially misusing public funds. Her office is funded through the general fund of Washoe County. She's potentially subjecting herself to liability, the county to liability, and she's potentially violating her oath of office. If I can, I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
You may do so.
Thank you.
Okay, and Ms. Richards, before you proceed, Ms. Richards, I neglected to admit that both Justices and Kadish and Silver are not here today, but they both, Justice Silver and Stiglitz, I'm sorry, Justice Kadish, I like that, they both will participate and listen to this oral argument then. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Richards.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Justices. May it please the Court. Jennifer Richards, Washoe Legal Services, representing Charles Vandermark. At 5 years old, Mr. Vandermark entered the foster care system. His mother had died during childbirth, and his siblings were scattered into different homes. When he came of age, he enlisted in the Navy. After the war, he began to cultivate a life on his own terms. Home was wherever he laid his hat and wherever he parked his camper. As Jack Kerouac once said, "There was nowhere to go but everywhere, so just keep on rolling under the stars." This is a case about a homeless veteran who came into our community in crisis. A judge has already weighed the evidence in this case and has held that he qualifies for the public guardian. In order to overturn that ruling, this court must find that there was reversible error.
Well, can I ask you, going back to the subsection that I pointed to, subsection B of the statute that determines what a resident, how do you get past that? Are you maintaining that he wasn't in institutional care at the time he entered the county?
Here, and I think the order in which the court considers this case is important, and I think that considering Part A and then Part B is a threshold consideration this court must make. When the court considers Part A, whether there's an intent to reside, there are facts to support an intent to reside. The court found that Mr. Vandermark lived an untethered lifestyle, that he was in the community for approximately a week before entering institutional care at the VA facility, and that he continued his presence in the community. If the court looks at...
He wasn't voluntarily in here for 5 days, correct?
Well, Your Honor...
Or was he?
I think that's a judicial determination that the court makes when they consider the totality of the facts and circumstances.
Was he and how did he get there?
Your Honor, he was at Tahoe Forest Hospital. They determined that he was safe to discharge. The record on appeal indicates he was alert and he was oriented. He went willingly with the social workers from the VA. He had his prescriptions refilled at the VA, and he elected to participate in the Homeless Healthcare Veterans Program, which provides housing. The argument from appellant is that there must be some magic language that we must require to infer intent, but it's a judicial determination based on the facts. This court cannot require a magic phrase. Vulnerable persons may be nonverbal or due to their disability or specific diagnosis, unable to articulate an intent to reside anywhere. And so we shouldn't add that requirement.
Wasn't he in some sort of temporary placement pending a bed being available in an institution?
Your Honor, he was in a temporary placement, and then they determined because he had declined in that temporary placement, he needed to be placed within the community living center, which is essentially a nursing facility attached to the Veterans Hospital.
Sorry, so going back to Justice Perigary's question, under NRS 253.200, that's subsection 9, so except as otherwise provided in paragraph B, the county of residence of a person is the county to which the person moved with the intent to reside for an indefinite period. Are you saying that that section applies, or that section B applies, or?
Your Honor, I'm indicating to the court that we need only reach item A, and the court need not reach section B under the analysis, because at the time, facts could support either a finding that he intended to stay here for an indefinite period, or only that he intended to leave California headed east. There's indications in the record that he had identified no destination. He just stated, I was just going, I wanted to be free to live on my own terms under the stars. And so an absence of intent, he also didn't formulate a plan to leave. He was placed in the community. He continued to be in the community. And
didn't
so
the district court find that, in fact, he didn't have the intent to reside here? So to agree with you, we'd actually have to find she abused her discretion in finding that.
I think if the court reviews the order granting guardianship, the district court indicated facts and circumstances supporting that there was an intent to reside here based upon his clear indication he did not wish to return to California, that he was connected through Reno-based services, albeit voluntarily, it appears, because he was safely discharged from the hospital, and his long history of homelessness and transience. Based upon all of that, the court found that there was intent, and they inferred intent.
The court found there was intent to stay here?
Yes, Your Honor, looking at the court's order, item 16.
Right, the court finds Washoe County is presently Mr. Vanderbart's
county of residence.
County of residence. So the court found, and you would say that's a question of fact to which we owe deferential review?
Yes, Your Honor.
Under the subparagraph A of the 253 statute?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that this boils down to, did the court commit reversible error here? And courts will continue to be faced with difficult decisions in guardianship regarding persons' civil liberties, their due process rights, and their access to critical resources. And we need to give courts deference in determining intent. The court could look to children under the UCCJEA. If an addicted mother brings their child into our state, are we going to deny access to CPS services? Such a policy advocated by the appellant could disproportionately affect minorities, LGBT seniors, and those with disabilities, Your Honor. According to statistics from the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, on any given day, over 7,000 people are homeless in Nevada. Data from the National Alliance to End Homelessness indicates that minority groups experience homelessness at higher rates than whites. Additionally, people living in homeless shelters are twice as likely as the general population to suffer from a disability. The district court recognized a long body of case law regarding the fundamental right to travel, durational residency requirements, and the right to access critical services. A narrow interpretation of this statute will disenfranchise those who are most at risk. As argued in the briefing.
So you would say that a generous reading of subparagraph A is arguably constitutionally mandated?
Yes, Your Honor.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
No, thank you, Your Honor. And that's what this court needs to review and provide clarity so that going forward in guardianships, we understand how to handle persons that come into our communities in a way that meets the constitutional requirements.
It is a bit, I mean, when I first looked at this, I wondered whether there was an argument that the 253 statute really concerned Nevada counties and not people who are coming interstate. But I'm not sure that argument works.
Your Honor, I would tend to agree with you on that because in researching the legislative history, it appears that the language was taken directly from NRS 428.020, which governs cost shifting between counties when we're talking about indigent patients. And so it doesn't appear that the public guardian statute under 253 contemplated interstate jurisdictional conflicts. And that's where the Uniform Adult Guardianship Protective Proceedings Jurisdiction Act comes into play, because that was designed to prevent jurisdictional conflicts so that persons aren't lost in the system without access to critical services.
Physical presence plus no home state equals jurisdiction, yet if you don't have a public guardian and the person is indigent, jurisdiction to do nothing.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's why in the briefing I argued that these statutes must be read harmoniously. A strict reading of the statute is going to perhaps leave a person without a recourse. If someone's brought into this state and there needs to be emergency jurisdiction under 159-1998 to facilitate protective acts or return them, under a strict reading, the public guardian's office would be precluded from serving in that capacity.
Your opposing colleague has a point that you're asking the public guardian to engage in ultra vires activity and use general fund dollars for something they're not authorized to do. What do you say in response?
Your Honor, well, in response, I direct the court back to, this is a case about reversible error. Did the district court have ample findings to support or infer intent to reside in Washoe County? And I would submit to the court that there were findings of substantial evidence to support that. Whether or not the legislature needs to go back and address the public guardian statute is perhaps a different issue, but in this case, permission to finish, Your Honor?
You're fine. You still have 5 minutes. That's just a...
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. But in this case, we need to also go back and review that there wasn't reversible error.
So, and also, this man is not somebody who intent to reside indefinitely. That may be different for a Jack Kerouac kind of human being than another one. I mean, so it is a bit fact-bound as well as law-bound.
Correct, Your Honor. As the district court found, he lived an untethered lifestyle, and the court was envious of his wanderlust. And so philosophically, Mr. Vandermark may not be the type of individual who would ever say home means Nevada or, you know,
right,
this is where I would be. Home was a fluid concept for him. He wants to be close to nature, and that is how he's lived his entire life, Your Honor.
So you actually represent Mr. Vandermark here today, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so is this, I don't know to what extent he's able to express his desires, but are you, I mean, does he actually want you to be here advocating for him to be able to have a guardianship in Washoe County?
Thank you, Your Honor, for the question. Protected Persons Council is fairly new in the state of Nevada. We adopt a client advocacy model. When our clients are not able to directly indicate our representation, we take on a legal interest model. And so in this case, jurisdiction is all that is at issue here. Mr. Vandermark has a legal interest in having access to critical services in this case, and that's the basis of the advocacy today.
Let me ask you in that regard. Going back to subsection B of the statute, If he's going to get services in California, right, if B applies, then California is where his residence is. What's wrong with that? He's going to get services, just not here.
Here, I think there's a factual distinction if the court does engage in the analysis under 250 through 200B, and that is that he was in the community for a week or so and maintained a community presence here. So that could be a distinguishing factor. But at the end of the day, I would, again, refer the court back to the reversible error standard. There were facts.
I'm asking you a very specific question. Why does it make such a big difference whether it's here or California, where clearly he would get services in California?
Your Honor, contained in the record, California declined to exercise jurisdiction.
That's because they thought we had jurisdiction.
So, Your Honor, that is a distinguishing fact that this court should consider, because that was contained in emails to the conservatorship program. That was not done through conference with the court in Stanislaus County.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just clarify sort of the timing of when he was first brought to Nevada? I understand he was originally brought here from California after this car accident. He was brought to the Tahoe Forest Hospital, was discharged October 25th of 2016 to the VA for placement at a VA facility. The VA, he was driven to the Sierra Nevada healthcare system, the VA, for a medication refill. He then stayed at a Reno hotel for the night. The next day, admitted to the Behavioral Health Center in Reno. And on November 3rd, the VA's emergency department, then the Community Living Center, on November 16th. Where in the time frame are you saying that he spent like a week at some hotel in Reno?
Well, Your Honor, I would distinguish on October 25th, he stayed a night in a hotel and then he entered community housing. I don't think that community housing would be inferred as institutional care. And so that's the distinguishing fact, Your Honor, so that he would have been in the community from 10/25 until November 3rd, when he was admitted to the VA hospital in the Community Living Center, which is a facility attached to the hospital.
So it's a VA community housing community or facility.
Permission to respond?
Yes, thanks.
Your Honor, perhaps the VA counsel could speak a little more knowledgeably than I could, but the Healthcare for Homeless Veterans program finds housing in the community for veterans, apartments, group homes, and so that would not meet the definition of institutional care when we look at cases like Olmstead, et cetera.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Richards, the
go ahead. Additional question on that point. And during that period of time, he was free to leave. He could have wandered off.
Yes, Your Honor.
But he didn't.
He was free to leave during that time that he was in the community.
But he didn't.
He did not.
Okay, and just again for the record, Mr. Redd, this community housing was located in Washoe County.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, Ms. Gustin, you have about...
Mr. Stovall.
Your Honor, I don't know if we have any time left, but there were a couple questions that
I need to be asked. Let me ask, does any justices want to have any questions for Mr. Stovall?
I guess to the extent he can clarify that period of time and what the housing situation was.
Come on up here so we can get you on the record here on this.
Good morning, Justin Stovall for the VA. To Justice Perry's question as to why he was essentially stays here in Washoe as opposed to going to California. My understanding, and this is pretty clear in the record from testimony, I believe, from Ms. Simonis, he's receiving benevolent care here, right? If he goes to California, they would only be able to take him under a contract basis. And so I do not believe that the record indicates that he would actually be able to receive the same care that he's receiving here. in Nevada, in California. So that's part of the problem.
So is that an incentive for the Californians to come into Nevada and get better care?
Excuse me?
Is that an incentive for Californians or other jurisdictions to come into Nevada to get better care?
Well, I think in this case, this is pretty particular to Mr. Vandermark's particular situation here. As to Justice Kadish, and I believe Justice Pickering's question regarding the alternate basis is when it comes to the residents, I do believe that the order did indicate that the court rested its decision on Mr. Vandermark having no residence. I just wanted to clarify that, at least when it came to my brief, I was speaking alternatively. This court has long held that it can uphold a district court decision for the wrong, that reaches the right outcome, even if it's for the wrong reasons. So I was not trying to convince the court to find that the district court abused its discretion, just saying that it could find alternatively in that respect. Additionally, as to, I think, the court's general points regarding what we're talking about here, I do see the entire proceeding below as being framed as a jurisdictional issue. I was pretty clear and specific in the brief that at least the VA sees this as a jurisdictional and then venue decision. So I do agree with, I guess, where the court's going when it was speaking to venue being kind of an inter-county issue. So it's our position that you start with jurisdiction first, which is the home state analysis under 159, and then move to 253-200, which is the county of residence. And so really, in this case, the...
Counsel, I'm going to have to cut you off because we did use up all the time.
Sure.
But,
so no other questions?
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Gustin, you get 3 more minutes because we ran over with the other side, so you can add 3 minutes to your time. Okay, 3 additional
extra
minutes. It's on top of your other time.
Oh, okay.
Okay. You have 6:55 now.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, in response to Mr. Vandermark, here the court found on the record that Mr. Vandermark had no intent to remain in Washoe County. That's supported by substantial evidence in this record. There's no, you know, it's not clearly erroneous. The issue.
How does one establish intent for a incapacitated, vulnerable, protected person?
Well, Your Honor, I think you establish intent the same way you would for someone who's not vulnerable and incapacitated. You look at the person's statements, and then that's the direct evidence. And then you also look at the circumstantial evidence. One of the ideas that has...
But this man is in Nevada by virtue of the fact that the VA hauled him over here.
Correct.
I don't know that... I'm thinking more broadly beyond Mr. Vandermark's position. This is like the point I tried to make in the case before. This court is adopting potentially opinion-worthy positions, and this is a rule that would have broad impact throughout the state, depending upon how you assess it. So what troubles me is a homeless person in Washoe County living on the river for whom there is really no information about his or her background could not receive, the public guardian could not be appointed for that individual.
No, Your Honor, that's incorrect.
Why?
The Washoe County Public Guardian has many, many individuals who have been formerly homeless under their purview. What the court is looking at is the petition. It's the burden is on the petitioner to show by clear and convincing evidence that the person, you know, moved to Washoe County with the intent to reside. And so just because a person is homeless doesn't mean they can't formulate an intent to move to Washoe County with the intent to reside. The homelessness status, whether a person has housing or not, has nothing to do with that inquiry.
I didn't make my hypothetical based on whether they're housed or not. How do we know that the person who's living on the Truckee River had an intent to reside in Washoe County? What's the difference if we have no information about their background, and frequently that's the case? How do we establish their intent? And yet you take those cases.
Yes, Your Honor. The you have to look at the specific individual case and whether there's facts to suggest, you know, a lot of times what we will do is we'll look for former addresses. Even the Record Street homeless shelter can be used as an address. And so you can find information about these people to indicate, you know, how long that they've been in the county. Of course, that's a consideration when you're looking at intent to reside for an indefinite period of time. Most cases, you're going to have some circumstantial evidence which indicates that the person has been intending to reside within Washoe County. And there's various avenues to determine that apart from an individual's statements, who may, as Your Honor has correctly pointed out, may be incapacitated and may not be able to do that. And there are options for the court as well, which did occur in this case.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that the words used here, intent to reside for an indefinite period, really takes on a different context for me than those same words when we're talking about someone's intent to reside for purposes of voting or some other act that is volitional. My concern is that when the public guardian is in play and when the guardianship is in play, we're dealing with people who, by and large, while there are gradations of incapacity, have lacked the capacity to develop the kind of intent to reside that we would expect when that phrase is used in different contexts. Would you agree with that?
I agree that that's a concern, Your Honor. However, that's a concern that's within the province of the legislature. That's a policy consideration that the legislature must weigh, and in this case, you know, necessarily did weigh when the legislature decided to specifically define a county of residence as the legislature has defined it. The public guardian's office has to follow the letter of the law, the plain language of the statute. And while that is, you know, potentially a valid concern, that's something that the legislature inevitably weighed in and found on balance that the language of the statute was appropriate.
I have a question that's related, but on page 4, paragraph 16 of Judge Doherty's order.
Yes, sir.
Do you have that order there?
I do.
You've said several times that she found that Mr. Vandermark was, that Washoe County was not his residence. But paragraph 16 says the opposite. It says, here, based upon Mr. Vandermark's intent and desire that he not return to California, I mean, he did not want to go back to California, the fact that he became connected with some Reno area-based services since his arrival on October 25th, and we went through the 1025 to 11-3 with Justice Kadish, and Mr. Vandermark's long history of apparently intentional transience and homelessness, which sort of ties to the idea that for him, intent to reside indefinitely might be a much shorter term proposition, even when he was not mentally disabled, than it would be for you or for me. The court finds, and now I'm quoting, that Washoe County is presently Mr. Vandermark's county of residence. So to me, Judge Doherty made a fact finding that obviates the difficulty that your agency professes.
Your Honor, the facts that Judge Doherty has listed here in paragraph 16 are essentially Judge Doherty's own criteria for finding Washoe County residency. What the court has done is the court has essentially ignored what 253.200 subsection 9A actually says and has substituted its own considerations for the language that the legislature has set forth.
Your friend across the aisle makes the point that an expansive reading of 253 is appropriate given the constitutional concerns in play.
Well, Your Honor, the constitutional concerns that the court is referring to here, those concerns are with regard to durational residency requirements. In those Supreme Court cases, it found that a waiting period before being eligible for certain important benefits was unconstitutional because it violated an individual's right to travel. That's not what we're talking about in 253.200.
The difference, but the principle may apply in this situation. It's a hard case.
Well, do you agree with me that the language in A, 209A, is not resolved entirely based on duration? If an individual came here within one day with an intent to reside indefinitely, they would qualify for the appointment of the Washoe County Public Guardian, right?
Correct, Your Honor. If Mr. Vandermark had intentionally moved to Washoe County and had intended to reside in Washoe County for an indefinite period of time, he would have been eligible for public guardian services on day one. Those are not the facts of this case.
Well, I think, though, that the point that Justice Pickering's been asking about and referencing from the record is he was here, he's in a motel, that struck me, for a night, and then he's in this VA facility, and he was free to leave, but he didn't. So,
yes, Your Honor.
So can't one infer from that
that
satisfies his intent, at least?
No, Your Honor, that's not a reasonable inference. I mean, you have to keep in mind that Mr. Vandermark was in a car accident. His car was totaled. Mr. Vandermark had been car camping. He had been living out of his car. The VA comes to Mr. Vandermark and transports him across the California-Nevada line. The VA puts Mr. Vandermark up in a hotel for one night, paid for with an emergency voucher through the Veterans Administration, and then they evaluate him for intake into temporary housing the next day. Mr. Vandermark has no car, he has no housing, and of course he took the VA up on temporary housing. Mr. Vandermark was in that temporary housing. It's operated by the VA Behavioral Health Center for about a week before he decompensated and the VA admitted him to the VA hospital in Reno. It's not a reasonable inference that someone who is in temporary housing for a week had intended to reside for an indefinite period of time. And that's also belied by the record. Mr. Vandermark intended to be transient. He wanted to camp, he wanted to fish. He indicated through his counsel at the contested guardianship hearing that he did not want to be in Washoe County. He wanted to be in Wisconsin. That was his intention at the time. And so it's just not a reasonable inference that temporary housing evidenced some sort of an intent to remain. And of course, after that point in time, he has been in the community living center, which is essentially more or less a locked environment. Mr. Vandermark wears a wander guard on his ankle that triggers the doors to close and lock when he approaches the doors. So since that time, of course, he's not able to leave. He doesn't have that option. So to answer your question, no, Your Honor, I don't believe that's a reasonable inference. And more specifically, the district court found that he had no intent to stay. And that's the required finding under NRS 250.3.200.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Gustafson. We appreciate
your
argument. Counsel for Mr. Stovall and Ms. Richards as well. And we will take this case under submission. The court will be in recess until the next call of the court.